Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Jocelyn Sambira at United Nations headquarters in New York. Coming up in this week's program, women are more vulnerable to disaster impact with some exceptions, and information is power for Indigenous women of the Americas. But first, women and girls are paying the heaviest price as Yemen's humanitarian crisis deepens, increasing their vulnerability to violation and abuse. That's the view of Anjali Sen, the UN Population Fund representative in the country, who's in Geneva ahead of a high-level pledging conference on Tuesday to try and pull Yemen back from the brink of famine. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres will chair the event on behalf of the war-stricken Arab state, where 19 million are in need of aid and 7 million face starvation. Ms. Sen told Mai Yaqub that the lives of around 52,000 pregnant Yemeni women were under immediate threat due to complications they face giving birth.
We know that an estimated 18.8 million people, two-thirds of the population, are in need of some kind of assistance or protection. And the humanitarian situation has really worsened over the last 2 years. And the coping mechanisms of Yemeni, especially for women and girls, are really stretched, and they are paying the heaviest price in this humanitarian crisis. There are an estimated 2.2 million women and girls of childbearing age in Yemen today. And you can imagine that due to the rising food shortages, these have also left an estimated 1.1 million pregnant women malnourished. And this is really going to threaten the lives of approximately 52,000 women who are likely to develop complications during childbirth, because they're already debilitated and then they are facing food shortages, they are malnourished, and this is going to lead to real complications during childbirth.
Beside the food shortages, tell us more about their needs.
Yemen has had one of the highest rates of maternal mortality in the Arab region. So poor nutrition and the eroding health care, which again mean they are giving premature or low birth weight. And this is also, the conflict is has further weakened the position of women and girls. So their protection, this has led to a near erosion of their protection mechanisms. And they have increased vulnerability to violence and abuse. So what we are seeing is incidents of gender-based violence have reportedly increased by more than 63%, you can imagine, over the last 2 years. And putting 2.6 million women at risk of gender-based violence. So the question you asked really is very specific, that gender-based violence is increasing. We have seen that increase. And there are women, we have in 2016, we have reported 10,806 reported cases of gender-based violence. And we estimate that 52,000 women are at risk of sexual violence, including rape. This is the situation of women and girls in the country. All the protection mechanisms are weakening, and this is leading to the increased vulnerability to violence and abuse.
Indigenous women from the Americas are creating their own media to tell their stories and preserve the traditional knowledge of their people. That's according to Nidia Bustillos Rodriguez, a representative of Notimia, a news agency created by women journalists of indigenous or African descent from Mexico, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Bolivia, and Brazil. 13 members of the organization are in New York for the latest session of the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, which this year celebrates a decade since the signing of the UN Declaration on Indigenous Rights. Ms. Bustillo Rodriguez told Diane Penn of Notimia's plans to go global.
Notimia is the news agency for indigenous and Afro-descendant women. It is created in Mexico, but the intention is to work globally. That is why we are involving other people around the world. But our idea is to involve only women, because we want to create our news from our point of view as women in gender equality.
A lot of when we hear about the indigenous, we hear about problems, you know, access to land or women's participation. But it seems like Notimia is also, as you said, focusing on small stories but that aren't that small. It's about the actual people's lives.
Yeah, of course. We don't want to talk only about the problems we faced, but also to see a perspective that telling these stories, we have the whole big story. If we have all the small pieces, we can create a big one. And we can see also ways on solving the problems they have. And through these interviews, we see all the advances, the challenges, the messages they want to do. And also we talk about the dreams.
Thank you, Nidia. Is there anything further you think our listeners should know about Notimia or about the need for Indigenous women to, you know, take media into their own hands, create their own media?
Yeah. You know that media is the fourth power in the world. If you get information, you get the power. Because the media, information, if you know things, you know things in advance and you can prevent a lot of things. You are not in the doubt, and you can also share with other people similar experiences, and you don't need to invent things that are already invented. But with media also, with information, we want to do also is not to lose the knowledge of our elders. Otherwise, if you don't have this knowledge, we are going to be lost.
Women continue to be more vulnerable to the impacts of disaster, but in some countries it's men who are more of a concern. That was one of the surprising perspectives to emerge from a discussion on the empowerment of women and girls which took place at the recent 5th Regional Platform for Disaster Risk Reduction in the Americas in Canada. Virginia Clairvaux, director of the Department of Disaster Management and Emergencies for the Turks and Caicos Islands in the Caribbean, said that her government's been trying to empower more men following years of successfully encouraging women into disaster preparedness. Matthew Wells caught up with her after the session, along with Jacinda Fairholm, Regional Advisor in Disaster Risk Reduction for the UN Development Program, UNDP, based in Panama.
We recognize that women are comparatively disadvantaged when it comes to opportunity and privileges and rights in almost all places in the world. First of all, a premise that we operate from, and that has obviously lots of ramifications, and it's manifested itself in everything from employment to livelihoods to income to control of resources to their interrelationship dynamics to access to healthcare, which means that there's a tendency for women to be more vulnerable to the impact of disasters and take a longer time to recuperate or recover. So if you consider that, what type of legislation, policies, and programming do you put in place to respond to that? And that's where the risk reduction side of it comes in, is that you try to, prior to an event, address those issues so there's a proactive engagement with women, a proactive recognition of those comparatively greater vulnerability.
What practical examples can you cite from your work?
In the case of the Turks and Caicos Islands, we actually have the opposite taking place, where we do find that women and girls are empowered in disaster management. Our subcommittees that are set up to ensure that we are prepared to respond to various hazards, over 90% are chaired by female. So the needs of female and girls are not being neglected in disaster management in the Turks and Caicos Islands. What we have started doing in the Turks and Caicos Islands is the reverse, trying now to empower more men to take initiatives to lead the process, because the issue of empowerment should not be one versus the other. It shouldn't be female and girls over male and boys.
Is this really a cultural thing that, you know, that women tend to be the kind of the decision makers in households in Turks and Caicos?
I think in the case of Turks and Caicos Islands, recent initiative by the government in the past 15 years to proactively ensure that women are not disenfranchised in the social sectors, in disaster management, is what led to this. And so women have been empowered to the point where they're leaving the men counterparts behind, and the girls are following the female footstep and they're leaving the boys behind. What we are now doing in the Turks and Caicos Islands is trying to ensure this equity, not just for female, but to ensure we bring the male counterparts, the boys, along with us.
Some practical lessons then perhaps from the example here of the Turks and Caicos that could be applied elsewhere in the Americas and the Caribbean?
So I think the lesson to be learned is that there is a political will, which probably translates into very proactive, if not legislation, then policies and programming. All the more kudos to them.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jocelyn Sambira.